Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 281 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by a wonderful guest once again joining the show. He is Aaron Freeman at Locked On Falcons. Aaron, welcome back. It's been approximately a month, so it's like my like watch, you know, for I feel like Aaron needs to come on the show. It starts ticking right about, you know, around the 30-day mark. So welcome back. That would put you, we just talked about it, would have put you right before Kirk Cousins signed. So a lot has happened, obviously, since the last time you're on the show. So welcome back, first of all, and how are you doing?
Well, not that much has happened. They signed Kirk Cousins, and that's about it. But no, I appreciate the bat signal that you sent out, you know, that usually comes up once a month for me to join the show. So, you know, good to be back. Good to talk Falcons. Good to talk draft. We're at that time of year. I think Dane Brugler is going to drop the beast next week, I think. Yep, and so that's usually the point where it's like, okay, we're getting real close. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh yeah. No, we got, this is the part of the cycle where everyone that follows the draft has takes. So it's always fun at the beginning of the cycle. Everyone has takes about the same guys, but now it's like people have takes about like Malik Washington and like, you know, like further down than that. Like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of some like day three offensive tackle that, but you see, I'm proving myself wrong here because I'm forgetting Driscoll, you know, the offensive tackle from Marshall. Like, people have takes about him now. Like, we're arguing about, you know, Driscoll, is he worth a sixth or a seventh, or is that a waste of a pick? You know, that sort of thing. So that's the type of part of the season we are here. But guys, we're going to get into it. We're going to get into the draft. Also, of course, get Aaron's take on the new direction of the Falcons with Kirk Cousins at the helm of the quarterback position. On the remaking of the offense. And of course, we will get into the great debate at 8, as always. Which edge rusher do you like, or do you even want an edge rusher at all? We'll talk about the trade down, because a lot of people seem to just assume that a trade down will happen. Like, if you don't trade down, you're silly. So we'll talk about that. I feel like we've talked about that the last couple of seasons, but we'll rehash that conversation a bit and just kind of go through some of our favorite targets for the Falcons on this draft. This draft in 2024 here, almost said 2023 again, so I'm gonna avoid that mistake. It is 2024 officially. I did check my calendar before the show. So all right, guys, before we get started, I want to bring you a real quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. Folks, it is down to the final four, and BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. Now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. The MLB is here as well, along with the NBA. The NHL playoffs are right around the corner. And as always, BetOnline is your number one source for your summer sports wagering needs. Unless you're Bijan Robinson, your bracket's probably toast, you know, and even Bijan, you know, I'm sure it's not perfect anymore, but still, Bijan's probably, you know, not saying that he was betting money, you know, but if he was, I'm sure Bijan's in line for quite the prize, even based on that start. So congratulations to Bijan again. That's, you know, for his faith in Texas, that got him pretty far in that competition. But no matter what you do, guys, head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action. And remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right. Well, let's start it off, Aaron. I do want to get your take, because I feel like we talked about it a lot before the signing happened, but it's official. Kirk Cousins does join the Falcons, and we've got a new direction at quarterback, at least for a few years. I'm curious what you think now that we've had, you know, a month to sit on it, and we've seen some other additions, of course, at wide receiver along the way. But what do you think about the decision to go with Kirk Cousins, and how do you feel about this team going into this draft cycle?
Well, I don't have a lot to add from the long conversation we had a month ago about it, but basically my opinion then, my opinion now is it makes sense. It's a good move. There's pressure to win now. You want to get a clear upgrade. And if the Falcons hadn't gotten Kirk Cousins at the beginning of free agency, we'd be sitting here in duking it out with the Vikings for, you know, who's going to give up more in order to trade up. And it's like, well, the Vikings now have 3 picks that they are going to give up, and we got to give up 4 or something like that in order to try to get one of these quarterbacks. And so the Falcons just kind of avoided that whole debacle. You know, we'll see 3 to 5 years down the road, you know, whether the Vikings are sitting pretty with their quarterback situation, where the Falcons are with Kirk Cousins and their quarterback situation, as well as some of these other teams that will be taking quarterbacks early. So obviously it will be an ongoing debate, as all things are when it comes to sports teams. But I think it totally made sense that the Falcons would go out there and you know, put their thing down when it came to paying Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it does make a lot of sense for this team. And, you know, we talked about a lot of the reasons to do it, and they, I think, are valid given where this team is and where everyone, you know, is with it. But it's refreshing to see. And I think it will be, I imagine it'll be kind of jarring for people to actually see, like, I don't think people have actually seen like a real, like, top half of the NFL quarterback in Atlanta since like Matt Ryan left. And I wonder if people have like forgotten what that looks like to some extent. Like, oh wow, this is what it could be. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for some more stability at quarterback, and obviously hoping that Cousins is healthy and the Falcons can hit the ground running this year. But I'm excited about the move. You know, I don't know if I got your take on, well, we didn't talk about the wide receivers they signed, obviously, but you know, what do you think about the guys they brought in? There was, I mean, a number of them. I mean, four wide receiver additions, obviously Darnell Mooney, the big one, but they also trade for Rondale Moore, and they, you know, get Kadarius Hodge back and add Ray McLeod to the mix. Like, what do you think about this receiving core? I know a lot of people just kind of were like, okay, we're done now. Like, we don't need any more receivers, even though that was like the biggest need other than edge on the team going into free agency. It's like people just, I don't know. I still feel like it's a big need, but I'm curious what you think about that group now that we've added something, at least, aside of Drake London.
It's funny because when we had that conversation last month, I was like saying, I'm very intrigued to see what they do at wide receiver once they get the quarterback domino to fall, because like, to me, that's going to tell me a lot about this offense. So to be honest with you, I'm kind of underwhelmed with what they added at wide receiver. I feel like it's a pretty meh group of receivers. It's like Drake London and a whole bunch of complementary pieces. Now, these complementary pieces are much faster than the or I wouldn't say much faster. Scotty Miller and Van Jefferson, pretty quick. But, you know, overall, speed is the story with this group of guys, as opposed to last year, where it was, you know, the last 3 years, it's been more about size. So I like moving in that direction. But in terms of like getting guys that I don't know if the Falcons got anybody that really moves the needle for them. I think they got good players, good complementary players in that regard. I'm eager to see what Darnell Mooney can look like in this offense, kind of playing the Brandon Cooks role at that X wide receiver spot that the Rams had for a couple of years, with Drake London presumably playing more of that Z wide receiver role, which is the Robert Woods role in that offense. And we saw Puka Nacua play at a really high level and be very productive in that role this past year. So that's the thing that gets me excited. Rondale Moore, like I'm just not a big fan of these small running backs that are just basically like yak guys. Kevin, you and I have gone back and forth on Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. He's in that same mold. I'm just not a fan of that type of wide receiver. I've never really been a fan. Like, I got burned believing that Cordero Patterson was going to be a star in the NFL. And like, ever since then, I just refuse to buy in on any of these guys that are just, you know, run 2 yards on the field, turn around, catch it, and then get 10 yards of yak. I just think that has a place in the league, but I just don't think that's a big part of any team's offense, in my humble opinion. But like, you know, I agree with you. I think you want to get another weapon in here, someone that can be a needle mover. I think, you know, in an ideal world, they get one of the top three guys at the top of the draft, but I don't think we're living in that ideal world. I'm sure when we get to the conversation about trade back talk, like, you know, the wide receivers, I think, are going to be a central part of the Falcons' ability to trade back. If one of those guys is there at 8 and someone wants to come up for one of those guys, we'll see. You know, now that Buffalo traded Stephon Diggs, like, that's another avenue there potentially, but we'll see how that all plays out. So it's a deep class, so I think they'll be able to get a good player. I'm thinking they might target more of a slot type, so the Ladd McConkey truthers, the Jalen McMillan truthers, you know, some of those guys that are more slot oriented guys, Roman Wilson, you know, like, those guys make a ton of sense, I think, on potentially on day two. So we'll see if the Falcons target one of those guys to sort of add to this group, and hopefully I won't have to be ripping my hair out watching Rondale Moore be the number three wide receiver.
Yeah, exactly. I think like people are kind of overrating like Rondale Moore's potential like a lot. And like I like Rondale Moore, and I think obviously it's, you don't really have to give up much to get him, and you're not paying him a whole lot. So I think it's a worthy swing to see if he can get back to, because I think, you know, 2022, he was on like a 1,000-yard pace. Like he was looking really good and looking like he was finally getting comfortable in that offense, and then gets hurt, and it hasn't been the same since then. Obviously playing with Josh Dobbs wasn't the same as Kyler Murray, but didn't get back to those heights again. So it's, I think people just assuming he's going to be this productive wide receiver three, that you, and to the point where like you don't need to address wide receiver anymore. Like we're just done with wide receiver now. Like I just don't think that's correct. Like I think wide receiver is still a big need. And I do think Darnell Mooney like could be a needle mover for this team, but again, you're hoping that he gets back to his heights. But I think if you're excited about Darnell Mooney, that's probably the one to get excited about, because I think he could have a role and potentially command a lot of targets. And obviously you're still hoping to get more from Kyle Pitts, you know, and again, if Kyle Pitts can be more what you expected him to be with that number four, you know, pick, then this group of pass catchers is probably better than it's probably fine. Yeah, even without an addition. But I think expecting that without, and this is a deep receiver class, so I feel like not getting one of these receivers, at least on day two, would be kind of like a misuse of assets, given like how deep this class is and the quality of guy you can get, you know, at that part of the draft. It doesn't have to be Malachi Corley. Okay. You know, I'm not saying it has to be, you know, and honestly, like given what they have with like Bijan and now Rondale Moore and all that, it's probably not the type they're going to go for, because they kind of have that covered. But, I think there's a lot of good receivers, so I would still very much like to see the team go after receiver on day two, maybe even on day one at eight, if that type of guy is there. But, you know, kind of on that note, what do you think about eighth overall? Because it seems like the betting markets and the NFL at large is just like the Falcons are going to take an edge rusher. Most people seem to think it's Dallas Turner. There's been some buzz about corner. You know, they're going to be hosting Quinyon Mitchell this week for a top 30 visit. But there's also the wide receivers. One of them could potentially fall. And Joe Alt is the other, you know, sort of guy that's out there, I think, that people are considering. So I'm curious what you think. Do you think it really is just like they're going to take whichever edge rusher is there? Or are you thinking that one of these other positions is actually high in consideration at that spot?
Yeah, I mean, right now, and, you know, if you bring me on next week, I might have a different answer. But right now, I do lean more towards edge rusher, but, like, I don't think it's like a slam dunk or anything. Like, let's say there's like a 60% chance that they'll probably take an edge rusher at eight. Probably the 30% chance is corner, and then like 10%, you know, whatever else. You know, so I you know, it's an interesting conversation, because like I haven't done that much homework on DBs in this class, either corners or safeties. Mostly because I'm just like, I just made the decision of like, they're gonna bring in pieces there, and who they bring in and what they value at that position is going to tell us a lot more than me trying to do the homework ahead of time. You know, it's like I'll learn more about what this team's vision is afterwards, after the draft, as opposed to before the draft, when it comes to doing that stuff. And so part of me wonders a little bit, you know, would they take a corner with the idea that, you know, Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake may have this idea that like we can scheme pressure better than, you know, we can scheme coverage, right? And so that would lead you towards maybe taking a corner and waiting on an edge rusher in the draft. And I could see that happening. But I think the betting favorite is Dallas Turner. I think most of the Falcons' tendencies tend to suggest that that's probably where they'll go. So, you know, to me, it makes total sense to bet on that as the most likely one. That's probably the safest bet at this point in time. But, you know, one of the things that's going to be interesting with this, because I today was working on building my consensus board by looking at like 22, I think, and that number will grow in the next 3 weeks. But 22 different draft boards. Because historically under Terry Fontenot, this team tends to go chalky when it comes to drafting players based off of consensus early in the early rounds, right? They're not going far off the radar when it comes to that. Now, that was different from the Dimitroff era under Dan Quinn, where, you know, they would take players that most people thought were second round picks, AJ Terrell, Keanu Neal being two of those guys, you know, pretty high in the first round. And when I look at the consensus board, like Dallas Turner is like consensus 9, right, at this point in time, based off of the ones I have. And like I got 22 different big boards. Dallas Turner's in the top 10 in 12 of them. Jared Verse is in the top 10 in 4 of them. Laiatu Latu is only in the top 10 in 1 of them. And so based around that, like it clearly seems to be that the consensus is Dallas Turner's the top guy, right? And so based off of this team's, you know, draft trends over the last 3 years, that seems to be the direction to go. But then again, Raheem Morris is different, right? Like that was under Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot. Now it's Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot. And maybe Raheem Morris is going to come in here and basically like, I don't really like that guy, and be more that Dan Quinn style of coach of like, this is the type of player that I'm looking for. And, you know, someone else fits that archetype a little bit more. Although I would be, you know, I think Dallas Turner is a great fit in terms of what I expect the scheme to want to do with the simulated pressures and having a guy that can not only set the edge, can drop into coverage, and rush the quarterback. And I think he has the upside to be an impactful pass rusher. You know, I think he has a higher ceiling than the other top edges in this draft class, but we'll just sort of have to see. So, you know, basically your guess is as good as mine when it comes to what the Falcons are going to do. I'm basically just letting it all wash over me. And so like, they'll do what they do and we'll react to it on Thursday night. And, you know, 30% of the fan base is definitely not going to be happy because they never are when it comes to the draft. And we'll see if, you know, the other 70%, you know, is happy. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, like it, what do you mean, Aaron? You can't just sit there and not have just the most firm take. And if your take is wrong, you have to let us call you out. So how dare you for not giving us some take that we can clip off and you know, no, it, like, yes, like you're right. Ultimately, like we're never going to get clear intel on who they want. I think we were starting to get to the point with Arthur Smith that it was like easier to predict what these guys wanted. It was an offensive player. Usually it seems like, yeah. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Raheem or what they're doing there. Yeah, but
if Arthur Smith was still the coach, Brock Bowers would definitely be the pick. That's how I would just sit there and say that. He would definitely be the pick at 8. Yep. But now everything's out the window because Arthur Smith is gone.
Yes, exactly. We have no idea now. But I am curious, like, is Dallas Turner your preferred guy of the three edges? You know, I've been coming around a little bit more on Latu because his testing was better than expected. But I also agree with like what you're saying with their tendencies. Like they value length. Like they've all, like under Fontenot's drafting, they've pretty much always valued length. And that's the one thing that Latu doesn't have. So curious, like, is Dallas Turner your preferred guy or do you like one of the other ones better?
Right now he is. I'm going back into the film to really kind of do, I guess, a final pass through before the draft. And this week I'm working on Latu. Next week I'll probably take a deeper look at Dallas Turner and then Verse as well. So right now I kind of stack it Turner, Verse, and then Latu. But, you know, I feel like, to me, I'm pretty confident Latu is going to be 3 for me in that group. It's just a question of, do I come away feeling better about Turner in Verse, you know, and those guys, I still might flip those guys 1 and 2, but I think it'll probably wind up being Turner, Verse, and then Latu.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense to me. And, you know, I've had Verse number 1 throughout most of this process. And, you know, I'm wavering a little bit after this athletic testing, but mostly because I think the guys were all pretty close to begin with. It's not like one of these guys was like clearly number 1 and the other 2 were just like way off. And it's like, oh, well, the athletic testing changed everything. It's, no, it's more like it's slightly adjusting grades to the point now where maybe Latu might edge out Turner or Verse. But, you know, they're all good. So that's a good problem to have. And that's another part of the question about a potential trade down, is that the Falcons do have options at edge where, you know, if they really do like Latu, they could consider trading down. But the other side of that is like, who are teams trading up for? And that leads me into one other question. And I know Brandon Brass had a question about it as well. Like he was talking about Neighbors, but really Neighbors or Odunze at eight, if one of those guys is there, I mean, are you tempted to go for them, or does it still edge priority for you over those two receivers?
Well, if it was me, I'm taking the wide receiver. I'm just going to take the wide receiver.
Both of unless them? Or... Gonna,
yeah. I'm Neighbors is my second favorite prospect in this draft behind Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say favorite, I don't necessarily mean I think they're absolutely the best. It's just the guy I like. Like I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a better overall prospect than Malik Neighbors, but Malik Neighbors goes fast. And so I like going fast.
Zoom. Yeah.
If it was me, he's on the board, I'm taking him. Or someone's gonna come with me multiple first round picks in order to come up to get him, and then I might move off of him at that point in time just to set up, to be like, oh, I guess we have to build towards the future and all that stuff and get extra assets so that we can be in a position if we need to go get a quarterback of the future, we can do that. Okay, sure. But I just want to, as you say, zoom in the near future. So for me, I'm a big fan of Neighbors. I'm also a big fan of Odunze. I see both of those guys as well as Marvin Harrison Jr. as potential like elite receivers. I think very highly of Drake London, but I don't see him. I haven't, the player that I thought his ceiling was like maybe like Michael Thomas. And I haven't quite seen that yet from him through two seasons. Maybe we get that in the third season now that we have a quarterback, now that we have hopefully much improved play calling under Zach Robinson. So I'm not writing off Drake London at this point in time, but I'm just not ready to be like, he's definitely the type of guy that you're going to build your offense run. He's going to be the engine that runs your passing attack. And I think these three guys all are capable of being that guy. We'll see if they wind up living to that billing. We know typically in the NFL, not everybody bats 1,000. So there's a decent chance one of these guys, I won't say flames out, but doesn't quite live up to the hype in this draft. And that may be Malik Neighbors. He's probably the least polished of that group. But if it was me, I would definitely take the wide receiver if it was there. But I do think the wide receiver being there is going to get the most action from a trade back standpoint. I don't see any of the four quarterbacks being at eight.
Seems
that
unlikely.
Would be, it feels like that ship has sailed. So it's like, this is too deep of a tackle class in terms of first round talent that I don't think anybody's going to, maybe a team falls in love with Joe Alt or somebody like that, and they want to come up and get him. But more than likely, if a team is going to trade up, it's going to be for one of those wide receivers. And so we'll just see how that goes. So but to answer your question, I would definitely take one of those wide receivers at eight if they were there. I don't necessarily think the Falcons are going to do that at this point in time, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's curious to me because I think from a BPA standpoint, I think I'll have the three receivers above the edge rushers in this class, and I'll also have Joe Alt above them. On that note, I know George Costanza loves Joe Alt, and he was saying that I'm going to continue beating the Joe Alt drum. If he's there at eight, we should really consider taking him because, Cousins needs to be protected. That's true. Also, shout out to George for sponsoring this year's draft party giveaway. We'll be giving away four $50 NFL shop gift cards during the draft party. Once again, folks, so make sure you're tuned in for that. I believe we'll do it like we did last year. So like three of them will be sort of open, and then we'll have a fourth one for the patrons and channel members that we'll just random off during the show. So thanks again to George for sponsoring that. But yeah, I mean, on the topic of Joe Alt, and then we'll sort of shift into the discussion about potential trade. Like, what do you think about that idea? Because again, I do think people that have him as a top five talent in this class, I think it's legit. It's not exactly super clean because the Falcons are paying two tackles right now. They're not really going to be able to get out of either of those deals. I mean, maybe you could talk about trading one of those guys, but, tackle is not an immediate need, but like a 2 to 3 year need. So, from that angle, it could make sense. But what do you think about Joe Alt? Because if the receivers all go and we get four quarterbacks, then it's very possible Joe Alt is the one that's sitting there at eight.
Yeah, I'm not that high on the idea of taking Joe Alt. I like him as a player. He may go on to be, you know, one of the greats or something like that. And I'll be like, that's fine. Let him prosper somewhere else as a left tackle. I don't love the idea of moving him to right tackle. Like, we know typically rookies don't hit the ground running when they're playing a brand new position. We've just experienced this with a couple of guards. The Falcons have moved from tackle to guard, and making the switch from left tackle to right tackle can be a hard switch. We saw Penei Sewell, who is as talented a prospect as we've seen come out in the last, you know, 5-6 years, struggle early on playing right tackle. You know, and so, like, I think the idea that Joe Alt is going to come in and immediately be an upgrade over Caleb McGarry, I'm a little skeptical of that just because of the position switch, not because of the talent. But and so for me, the idea of bringing Joe Alt in to play right tackle, you're kind of throwing a grenade on the right side, which is kind of the strength of your offensive line. Obviously, you're right. There is a need in terms of projecting for the future at tackle. But to me, I'm just going to punt that. Or I would love to see this team take a tackle in this draft, but probably like in a third or fourth round, you know, get another depth option here and let Dwayne Lyford sort of develop that guy, as opposed to using a first round pick on him. Yeah. The other thing to me with, you know, George's point about Kirk Cousins need to be protected, I agree with that. But I think the emphasis for the Falcons on their protection, because Kirk Cousins is much more of a pocket quarterback, is on the interior. So to me, in a world where the Falcons were taking, you know, if Joe Alt had guard versatility, I would be more open to the Falcons drafting him, because I feel like that's the area of concern right now for building this offensive line around Kirk Cousins, because, you know, Drew Dolman's in a contract year, is been solid, but by no means do you sit there, at least as of today, feeling like that's our long-term answer at center. Now maybe he plays well enough this year that he earns a second contract a year from now. So we'll see on that. You know, I was a little underwhelmed with Matthew Bergeron in his rookie season. I'm curious to see what improvements he makes and what jumps he makes in year two. But I'm not 100% sold that, like, as maybe other people are, that he's the long-term answer at left guard. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Obviously Chris Lindstrom is, you know, as good as it gets at right guard, but he's coming off a little bit of a down year relative to his expectations. Not suggesting that the Falcons need to replace him, but I do worry more about the interior when it comes to protecting Kirk Cousins, because his style of play, you want to have, he's not going to be a mobile quarterback. So, you know, having those anchor points at the tackle position is to me less of an issue with his style of quarterbacking. And it's more about, you want to have that clean pocket for him to be able to step up into. This was the same issue when Matt Ryan was a quarterback, where, like, the interior just kept getting caved back in. Yeah. And that was a big issue on why some of those things derailed. So for me, if the Falcons are going to use an early pick on an offensive lineman, I would be much more open if that guy had guard versatility, as opposed to just, you know, planning for the future at the tackle position. So basically all that to say, I'm out on the idea of taking Joe Alt.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I get that idea. Like, I know, like, a guy that would honestly be perfect to, like, like Kingsley Suamatia, like, if they, like, it's just, like, he's going to go too early. Like, I feel like if he was, like, in the third, that would be, like, perfect, because he's that ideal, like, developmental tackle who just needs to kind of sit for a year. But he's just going to go too early, and I don't really think they can take that guy in the second round. But he would be perfect for for what they want to do. And unfortunately, I think he's perfect for what a lot of teams want to do, so he's probably not going to be there. But, you know, if Alt is there, or one of these receivers, the Falcons very well could get interest in a trade down. And this has gotten to the point where some fans actually critique making a pick at 8 at all, because they're like, well, you should just trade down and then make your pick. It's like, so I'm curious what you think about the feasibility of a trade down from 8. Let's say, like, and I think you and I both know that the feasibility is, like, less than 50%, even though I think a lot of fans treat it like it's just going to happen. But what do you think the most likely path for a trade down is for the Falcons, and how feasible do you think it is in general that something like that could actually occur on draft day?
Well, for years, Falcon fans have been like, we should just trade down. And every year I just like, yeah, sure. But it takes two to tango. But I think this year, of all years, of all those years where you should just trade down, this is the year where I think fans are not just talking out their butts. Right. So I do think it's feasible. But again, as I mentioned earlier, like, I think it really depends on one of those premier wide receivers being there and some team just being like, this is our guy. And, you know, I've seen Jacksonville thrown out there, Buffalo now that they traded Stephon Diggs. And I know Arthur Smith refuses to have wide receivers on his roster, but Pittsburgh could certainly use another weapon. I'm sure there's probably a couple other teams that I'm blanking on as we speak. I know Indianapolis,
yeah,
wants another wide receiver, but they're not going to trade up. But the Jets are also a team that I think definitely, you know, now that they've quote unquote solved their offensive line needs with a whole bunch of 40-year-olds, you know, maybe they're now looking to go get one of these top wide receivers to add to that room, because they just really need another weapon besides Garrett Wilson, especially if they want to make a run here with the Aaron Rodgers. So I think there will be options potentially. I think there are greater probability of the Falcons trading back this year than we've seen in a very long time. So I think it's a viable solution. And I think because if you're the Falcons and you know you got tunnel vision on taking defense with that first selection, and I think, you know, it's kind of the conversation we're having where it's like, you know, the top three edges are kind of jumbled together. You know, the top two or three corners are kind of jumbled together. And like, if you're the Falcons, like, you know, again, it's easy for us to say this. The team obviously is going to have stronger preferences because they're actually doing the evaluations. But if you imagine that they're all kind of clustered together, just like, why not move back, you know, two spots or five spots or 10 spots or something, pick up an extra third or whatever. And, you know, we'll still be able to get a guy that has basically the same grade as whoever our top guy is. And so that makes sense to me. So I do think a trade back is an option, but, you know, obviously it just really depends on the board falling a very specific way. And to me, it requires one of those, you know, in all likelihood, it's going to require one of those three receivers to sort of fall there. And depending on who you ask, you know, a lot of people think it'll be four quarterbacks and three receivers to be the top seven picks. So we'll see. And like, you know, we could very easily see one of those teams trading up, but instead of trading up with the Falcons, they just trade up with the Titans.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, it's one of those things where, or the Chargers or the Giants or the Cardinals or whatever. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's easy for us to sit here and say, yeah, we'll definitely have a trade back option, but maybe we won't. Maybe the action is earlier in those top seven picks as opposed to pick eight.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely a big consideration, and I agree with basically what you said, which is, you know, there's a good a better chance than usual, I guess we should say, that a trade down could be available. But it really depends on how things fall. And it also depends on the compensation, because, you know, there's a non-zero chance that it's actually teams like quite far down that are trying to trade up. And it's like, are you really trying to move back, you know, seven spots, 10 spots, whatever it might be? Are you willing to risk losing, you know, your guy? And what kind of compensation are they going to be offering? You know, are we talking future first? Are we talking like multiple day two picks? Like, you know, that's a big consideration. But yeah, I think they have a decent chance of pulling off a trade down if they want. But it's far from something that I would assume is just going to be an option. So, you know, consider it, folks, but don't assume that a trade down is likely. It's probably never better than like a 33% chance at any given time, because we don't know if the Falcons want to do it, first of all. We don't know if anybody else wants to do it, second of all. And third, whether it happens or not probably depends on exactly who is available at eight at that point. And we won't really know that until draft night, which is why it's fun. But we'll see how it all plays out, but that's definitely been a very popular idea lately. But we did have an interesting question coming from CMAS 231 with the $10. Thank you, man. He says, I'm curious what you think is more likely if the Falcons do some maneuvering in the first round. Say they basically trade back into the first round later. Would it be more likely that they take their edge rusher first and then trade back into the first round for that cornerback, or more likely that they take that cornerback and then trade back into the first round for the edge? I think To me, I think the edge and then corner makes the most sense given like the way the board is probably going to fall and where the talent is, because I think there's probably still some good corners available towards the end of the first round. But I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know if they would really feel like they had to trade up into the first round for a corner or an edge. Like, I don't really think there'll be an edge like worth it at that point, but corner maybe. But I'm curious what you think if they do trade back up into the first round, if it would be more likely to be for corner or edge or something else.
I kind of have the reverse opinion. I think corner first and then trade up for an edge, just because I think that second round talent is much thinner at edge than it is at corner. Like I think you can wait. If you take an edge at 8, you can wait to 43 and see who's available. Again, I say that as someone who has not done that much homework on the cornerback class, but just looking at the general rankings and the general vibes that I've heard and the glimpses of the players I've heard that I've seen, yeah. You know, like I think there are going to be plenty of solid options for you at cornerback if you wait to 43. I don't know if that's going to be the case at edge rusher. Right. And so to me, that scenario makes more sense if you take the corner first and then trade up for the edge rusher, just because that position is going to thin out probably much sooner. It's like, you know, once Chop Robinson's gone, then it's like, are you taking Marshawn Nyland? Like, is that the right. Chris Braswell is like, yeah, good players, but like, you know, yeah, I don't know, but that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question though, for sure. Brandon wants to know if we have any thoughts on Kieran, the offensive tackle from Yale in the mid rounds. Yeah, he's been getting some hype. I mean, I haven't actually watched him, but I know he does have a lot of fans. I'm going to attempt to say his, it's like Amagaji or something like that, I think is Kieran Amagaji. Yeah. He's interesting, obviously, but you know, when you're going for those like prospects from Yale, it's or that type of school, it's like I would just assume that you're gonna have to, you know, wait before they play. But what do you think about that, about Kieran as a potential like developmental tackle?
Yeah, I haven't watched him either, but I've heard good things about him. You know, some people kind of see him as a borderline first round type of player. I've seen from some folks. So, like, he would be definitely intriguing, I think, as a day two option, as that sort of developmental offensive tackle, at least, again, based not off of watching him, just based off of what I hear. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, he's interesting for sure. Let's talk beyond the first round here. I guess I'm curious, before we get beyond the first round, we just talked about corner, but I mean, would you consider corner at 8, or is it like edge, as you have the edge guys above all the corners in this class?
I mean, for me, like, I don't have any strong takes on the corners class. Like, I like Quinyon Mitchell. I thought he was really good at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was the best player at the Senior Bowl. I've watched his film at Toledo. It's fine. Like, you know, like it's just like it's one of those things where it's like he's good, he's clearly a good player in terms of like this is a definite one of the 8 best players in this draft class. Like I don't know if I know that or see that quite yet. Terrion Arnold, another player I like, but like don't really have a strong take on him. Cooper DeJean, I'm not as high on Cooper DeJean as other people are, but like he's kind of this year's Joey Porter Jr., who was a player that I wasn't necessarily a fan of because I wasn't in love with his man cover skills, but then he got drafted by Pittsburgh and they just basically play cover 3 zone. And it's like, well, that's the perfect scheme for Joey Porter Jr.
Right.
And I kind of feel like Cooper DeJean is kind of in the same boat, but the difference between Cooper DeJean is he also can play safety and he can play some slot and stuff. And so that versatility gives you a little bit more added value, even if I don't necessarily love you as a pure outside man coverage corner. Not to mention, you know, the expectation that I don't know if the Falcons are going to play as much man coverage as they did last year under Ryan Nielsen. And, you know, I like Nate Wiggins. You know, like I don't have a strong preference when it comes to cornerbacks. So it's like if they take a corner at 8, I'll be like, okay, you know, cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Yeah, I would consider Quinyon. Like I do think Quinyon is like a fringe top 10 guy in this class. But yeah, I mean, I still feel like I just like the corners, like, in day two better than the edge rushers. Like, basically the same thing you said, except I would just rather get, like, the top. Well, I think I want one of the top three edge guys, and then I'm fine with seeing if we can get, like, TJ Tampa at 43 or something, and then just going from there. But, yeah, I think the corner class is much deeper. Like, you can find potential starters, like, later. Like, you've got, you know, some guys in the mid-rounds that are interesting. You know, Kyrie Jackson is interesting for sure. You know, Max Melton, the FSU guys. Chris Abrams Drain was another guy that was good at the Senior Bowl. Cam Hart, you know. Like, there's, like, flavors of corner you could get, you know, as you go through the day, like, day two and into early day three that I think are more interesting than the edge guys that I think, again, it's, like, once you get past the top three edge guys, it's like, okay, we've dropped down a lot. I know a lot of people like Chop Robinson. He kind of scares me, but you know, he's just developmental. That's all. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But I just don't love the edge guys once you get past that point. So curious to see what the team ends up prioritizing there. But I do like the edge guys better. But yeah, speaking of day two, you know, I think day two is probably where we're going to have fun, like, with this class, because the Falcons do have a lot of picks. They've got three day two picks right now. If they trade down, they'll probably have more. So they could be maneuvering on day two, potentially. They could be considering a number of positions. We already talked about edge and corner and wide receiver, but those are all positions that could be in play on day two as well as potentially safety, maybe getting in the mix there. You know, I know there's been some talk of Devondre Sweat potentially sneaking in to the Falcons, but you know, the GOAT Eddie Goldman is back, so do we really need a nose tackle? You know, this... I've never seen a guy like stick with a team for 3 years while never playing. Like, I don't think this has ever happened in Falcons history, but Eddie Goldman, man, he's the GOAT of the offseason every year, that's for sure. But like, curious where you would prioritize and target on day two, you know, because we did talk about wide receiver. If they don't take one at eight, that's a good place for that. Maybe corner, maybe safety, whatever. But what are your favorite sort of places to go on day two for the Falcons?
Yeah, I think those three spots, edge, corner, wide receiver, feel like in some order the right way to go to attack your first three picks. Outside of that, like, I probably lean safety, even though, again, like, I haven't really watched guys, but I've just been listening to other people talk about the safeties. And, like, you know, that's where, like, to me, it's going to be interesting to sort of see what the vision is for this team. Because, you know, I could see a scenario where the Falcons kind of hunt at safety, you know, maybe take a day three guy, a depth piece to come in and play special teams and run it back with DeMarco Hellams and Richie Grant sort of competing opposite Jesse Bates, because I was just talking to Max Chadwick of Pro Football Focus, who covers college football for them earlier this week. And he was talking about how loaded next year's safety class is. And this year's safety class is a little bit of a down year. And do you want to sort of commit early to a, you know, this is kind of the conversation we had a couple of years ago when we drafted Richie Grant, where that safety class was not as strong as maybe some other recent years. And, you know, do you want to commit in a down year to a guy that, you know, if you say you use a second or third round pick on, that guy's going to be penciled in to be your starter for the next 4 years when a stronger class is coming out next year. So it makes sense from one perspective to just run it back with Richie Grant and DeMarco Hellams, maybe add another body in there, give those guys one more chance under this new regime, Jimmy Lake, Raheem Morris, you know, Jerry Gray, safety whispers or whatever, see if you can get more out of those guys. And if it doesn't work out, then, you know, you have an opening next year, natural. Richie Grant's a free agent. You let him walk a free agency. And in a strong safety class, like, maybe you can get that sort of long-term answer there. But at the same time, like, I also think it also makes sense to take a safety. And the only safety I've really watched is, like, Tyler Newbin of Minnesota. I like him. Yeah, you know? You know, he's kind of like a poor man's Antoine Winfield, right? You know, I don't know if it's the Minnesota uniform that's leading me in that direction.
You helmet,
like,
scout?
You know, he's a ball hawk, but I don't think he has quite the coverage and range that Winfield had. And so I expect him to probably be more of a third round pick. I personally think Winfield should have been a first round pick, but he went in round two. He was one of my favorite players in that draft class. And I was devastated to see him go to Tampa Bay, and watching him terrorize this Falcons offense for the next decade is not going to be fun. But, you know, I've heard good things about Jaden Hicks, the Washington State safety. Yeah. It was more of that kind of box safety, that sort of more hard-hitting guy. And, you know, one of the things that Raheem Morris has dabbled with is being more of a cover three scheme, right? And having that type of player that that fits more DeMarco Helm's skill set than, you know, some of the split safety stuff that, you know, the Falcons were running under Ryan Nielsen. And Jaden Hicks would fit in that type. But there's also other safeties that I've heard that are really good at the sort of split safety. If you want to play a lot more quarters and a lot more two high looks and whatnot, and having another guy that can be that sort of deep safety next to Jesse Bates, you can find some of those guys in this draft class. So I'm very intrigued to see how the Falcons address their safety position, because I think it's going to kind of tell us a lot about what schematically Jimmy Lake and Raheem Morris are planning to do this year, as well as, you know, sort of indicating sort of, you know, are they sort of projecting ahead to next year and being like, yeah, let's give Richie Grant one more chance. Let's see what DeMarco Helms can do in year two. And then we'll figure out the safety a year from now. So safety is one of those positions that I could definitely see the team prioritizing on day two, or just completely ignoring it altogether.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think safety is really underrated. I think that it's a big need, but, you know, they haven't really gone out of their way to address it. I mean, they haven't really addressed the defense at all. To the point where it's like, I wonder if they're just kind of like, let's see what we get in the draft and then we'll sign guys, because we're just not in any hurry. And they clearly aren't in any hurry. And you know, maybe they'll get some discounts on guys if they wait, I guess we'll see. But, I think you're right. Like, safety is definitely one that I would watch. You know, I do like Tyler Newbin, and I know his like athletic testing was not great. He looks way more athletic on tape. Maybe that's just him being really instinctual or something, and that's fine with me. You know, whatever. So we all know like the 40 time is the most overrated thing for safeties in the world. Like, you know, just think about Desmond Southward, guys, if you think about how important that 40 time is for a safety. So, but if you got great instincts, then you don't need a great 40 time. If you have terrible instincts, then you desperately need a good 40 and like elite testing, because otherwise you have no chance at all. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, you mentioned Jaden Hicks. I like him too. Kalen Bullock, I guess, was visiting with the Falcons, according to social media, like today. So he's interesting. He's more of that like single high free safety. He does not tackle.
That's what I've heard
at this point. So they're probably have to fix that. But you know, tackling can be coached, I've heard. So, you know, maybe you could fix that. I do really like Dadrian Taylor Demerson from Texas Tech. I feel like he's not someone that's been widely talked about, but I know like Lance Zierlein really loves him as like his like third or fourth safety in the class. And he's like super instinctual too. So I like him. And who's the other guy? Not Sion Vaki, the other Utah. Oh, Cole Bishop. Yeah, I think he's interesting as well. So there's definitely some good safeties. Wide receiver is the one that like I always get excited about in this range. And it's actually like I really like some of the guys in the third round. Like other than like hoping that like Ladd McConkey falls to 43, which honestly seems like it's more likely to happen than it seemed like it was like a month or two ago. But the safeties like towards, you know, that day three, like early day three, like late day two range. Curious wide receivers. I mean, like in that range, like what do you think about the group on day two at wide receiver? Are there any guys that you would prioritize trying to add to complement what the Falcons already got?
Yeah. I'm a big Ladd McConkey fan. I like Ricky Pearsall. I like Jalen McMillan. I'm not as in love with Jalen Polk as maybe other people are, but he's a good player.
Yeah.
I like Roman Wilson. I like Troy Franklin. I haven't gotten around to watching Xavier Leggett deeply. I've seen him in passing when it comes to watching like Spencer Rattler and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I like this wide receiver group. You know, I don't know if it's like, you know, I've been hearing all offseason long, it's like, oh, this is a great group of wide receivers and super deep. And it's like, yeah, you can get good players on day two. I don't know if it's as good, like, you know, I don't know if you're getting stars. Like you're getting more like guys that are like high end number threes, and maybe a couple of those guys go to the right situation that they can be turned into number twos, more so than just like, you know, these guys that are going to be like dominant players in the NFL or whatnot. Like there's, we've already mentioned Malachi Corley. I'm not as big a fan of Keon Coleman. So there's a couple of guys that are in that range that I'm just like, I don't think they're as good as people have been hyping up. Like, you know, some people have Keon Coleman as like a top 20 talent in this draft class. And no, I don't see that at all. But, you know, and I wanted to like Keon Coleman a lot because, you know, but it is what it is. So, there's plenty of wide receivers that I'm a fan of. And, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards like getting Jalen McMillan. Like that seems to be the sweet spot at like 74 mm-hmm. for me. Right. But we'll see how that all goes. Like it'll really depend on if there's a run on wide receivers at the end of round one, which I think some people are predicting that there'll be a run on those guys. And then that may move up a lot of the guys that you expect, you know, that's where the Ladd McConkey might sneak into the first round. And that's going to push guys up the board. And so maybe you have to get that guy at 43, as opposed to waiting to 74 to get that guy. So it'll all play out on draft day, but that 74 pick seems like a sweet spot for me personally to get one of those, I guess, tier three wide receivers or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, you wonder if like it's a good class, so teams just start pouncing on these guys. Like, I mean, we know we're going to see three probably go in the top eight, but like, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. and Adonai Mitchell, like maybe they both go in the top 20. And then it's like, you just see like a mad scramble after that. Or sometimes it happens the opposite where it's like teams know there's wide receivers on day two, so they just kind of wait. So I'm definitely curious to see like which way it goes, because I would love to have McConkey fall to 43. That would be ideal, but I wouldn't count on that, folks. Like I would not assume that that's likely to happen, but you just be happy if it does happen. But I've just found myself like just in love with like Malik Washington. Just like I just think his game is really interesting. I don't know if you've seen him at all yet, but he just seems like that like early day three, late day two, like slot receiver that just comes in and just gets like 800 yards just because he's a target hog. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you feel about Malik Washington or any of those other later guys as like more complimentary pieces. I agree with you. I do like McMillan, and I think Jalen Polk is interesting as well, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. Xavier Leggett too. Like if you want to swing for that like wide receiver two upside guy, it's probably Xavier Leggett, but he's probably not going to play a lot like this year. Like he might be like a sort of Jonathan Mingo-esque character this year, which like I like Jonathan Mingo. And I tried to tell people, like, I don't know that Jonathan Mingo is going to like come in and like immediately be like a wide receiver too. I think he has great potential. So that could be like Xavier Leggett's timeline, and that might, you know, piss a lot of people off. So consider that if you like Xavier Leggett, that it might not be an instant thing, but I do like him too. But yeah, I don't know if you have a take on like Malik Washington and those other like later guys.
Yeah, I haven't done a deep dive on Malik Washington, but from the glimpses I've seen, yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. Like to me, the scenario I'm envisioning is if that run does happen maybe sometime in round two or late round one and starts pushing guys up, like then okay, and Jalen McMillan's gone or whatever, then okay, Malik Washington's maybe the guy that you'd get at 74 or 79 or something like that. So he's a guy that does intrigue me. At some point, I'll probably take a deeper look at his film between now and the draft. But I've liked the glimpses I've seen of him as another guy that fits that mold.
Yeah, definitely interesting. And I think we've covered most of the bases. I don't know. Let's see. I know we had a Georgia is out here caping for Brock Bowers, saying that, you know, Bowers would make this offense difficult to handle. I think he was a top three player in this draft pre-injury. You know, if you guys insist on not taking Joel Alt, why not take Bowers? You know, it is. I mean, Brock Bowers is very good. Like, don't get me wrong, George. This is not a regime that like prioritizes tight end. Like again, like what Aaron said, like if Arthur Smith was here, we would like be having unironic Brock Bowers conversations right now. Like
he would be the pick. I would sit here.
he would be know. The pick. Yes. Yeah, like we would pick. Know. We would confidently bet on it at this point, but as confident as you can,
100% certain Brock Bowers would be the pick.
Can't lose, pick. You know, take it at, you know, negative money, but for this team, I don't really think that they will, but Brock Bowers is very good. No slander meant towards Brock Bowers whatsoever, but, Mad Tom K also asked about Malik Washington. I guess we did cover that, Mad. So thank you for the question, though. Appreciate you, man. Michael Scott says, I've seen Drake May somehow falling and a couple of mocks since his pro day. If he's there, do you think we take him to be the heir apparent? He will not be there. Like, let me make that clear. Like, I don't think any of the four quarterbacks are going to fall. I the whole thing with Drake May is just, to me, like, BS. Like, I don't really think that he's getting out of the top three, much less the top six. But if Drake May was there at eight, I think you have to consider it, obviously. You also have to consider the massive haul of picks you're going to get from somebody if he is there. And that's exactly why he's not going to be there. Because the second Drake May makes it out of the top four, there's going to be teams clamoring to get him at five, at six, at seven. And if he's still there at eight, no one was able to get a deal done, then I would gladly take whatever deal they're going to get. But I mean, yes, if Drake May's there at eight, I think you have to consider that for the Falcons, just because you're like, okay, the gods have willed us to have two quarterbacks, I guess, so we can't say no to that. But let's say that he does fall there, Aaron. What do you think? Would you consider that at that point, if you have a quarterback fall on your lap to that extent?
I mean, again, if I'm running the draft, yes, I'm sprinting to the podium and taking Drake May, because, again, probably my three favorite prospects in the draft, Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, and then Drake May. So I'm definitely taking him. I don't think the Falcons are going to do that, just because they're kind of stuck with Kirk Cousins for at least 2 years. And it's just like, are we going to use a top 10 pick on a player that's not going to play at all? Again, this is the Justin Fields conversation revisited, where that's part of the reason why the Falcons has passed on Justin Fields, because they weren't convinced that they were going to move off Matt Ryan anytime soon. Now, a year later, they decided to move off Matt Ryan.
Behold.
So,
yeah, you know.
So plans do change, right? We do definitely understand that in the NFL, not for long, all that stuff and more. But I would be shocked if the Falcons did that. But it's all moot, as you said. Drake May's not getting – like, there's a chance that he falls out of the top three. Like, there's a chance. There's no chance he's falling out of the top four. Like, if he's there at four, Minnesota is like, this is our dream scenario of – the top three teams overthinking it and taking Jaden Daniels and taking JJ McCarthy, and they're just going to let us get Drake May. And we were able to pivot off of Kirk Cousins to Drake May and have this high upside quarterback that, you know, I know there's a lot of polarizing opinions when it comes to Drake May, but, you know, there's no doubt that he has the tools and the potential to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And this is exactly what Minnesota has been envisioning, this exact scenario. So there's a 0% chance he's getting past four.
Yeah,
right. This is what they've done, all this stuff that they've been doing for the last month to try to position themselves in a position for this exact scenario to go down. That's their dream scenario at this point in time. So he's not getting past four. But in this hypothetical world where he does somehow, you know, I don't know, a gas mask video drops on draft night or something like that, similar to Laremy Tunsil, that causes a stir. Yeah, I don't see the Falcons doing it, but if it was me, I would 100% do it. Gas mask be damned.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens there, but no, I don't think there's any realistic scenario where he's available at eight. So I wouldn't spend too much time thinking about it. But if he was there, I mean, yeah, you'd have to consider it, no question. Let's see. So I think that's all the questions we had from the audience. Thank you guys. Any other prospects you really think would be just like great fits for the Falcons that you want to shout out, that you just have come across, you're like, we need to get these guys in Atlanta, you know, damn the cost, or maybe they're later round guys and the cost isn't that high. But just curious if you have any like of your guys right now that you're like really hoping that Atlanta lands when the draft comes around.
No, not really.
No, I don't like anyone. No, these guys.
Every year there's a handful of players that I do fall in love with, but for the most part, I just kind of just like, whatever, doesn't matter to me. I don't go into the draft with certain expectations, like with this sort of tunnel vision, we have to get these guys. And if we get these guys, all my dreams come through. And I just go like, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. It is what it is. Every year we sit here and we're like, we got to get this guy and we got to get this guy and we got to get this guy. And then they draft somebody else. And then 24 hours later, you're like, you know what? I've thought about it a little bit more and I actually like the pick that the Falcons actually made. And it's just like, all right, let's just skip the middle step and just, we'll just get to that point in the end. So that's usually how it goes. And there's always like one pick that the Falcons make, or I'm just like, really? But like, you know, as long as it's not the first round pick, then I'll be fine.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. And I gotta have takes. The people demand, you know, takes, and I gotta have my guys. But no, I it's a very healthy way to approach the draft, Aaron, you know. So I applaud you for not getting attached to prospects that were probably have like a 1% chance of ending up in Atlanta. That's very, it's great self-control on your part for sure.
I've been burned so many times, Kevin. Yeah. It's just
been doing
just,
it for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So. You know, so it's like, I still distinctly remember the Miles Jack 2016 draft where it was just like, this is the guy. This is,
oh,
it.
He's here. Yeah.
Need, you got the scheme fit. Jeff Ulbrich's on staff. He was the DC in UCLA. It's the perfect fit. Everything, you know, Falcons had this massive need at middle linebacker. He's top five prospect in that draft class when healthy. He's falling. We're going to get him. I'm Jack for Jack, all that stuff. Then we take Keanu Neal, who I liked, but yep, more as the second round pick. Mm-hmm. That's who I had penciled in as their second round pick. And so I'm like, what are we doing? And yep, like, then Keanu Neal turns into be one of my favorite players. And it's just, yeah, like, and Miles Jack is just okay in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, there's a lesson there where it's just like, you know,
shows getting, what we know.
Yeah. Getting attached to a player, you know, sometimes, and when you do get attached to a player, and that player turns into a superstar, you want to be like, I told you so. And, you know, you want to hold that resentment for the rest of your life. But, you know, for the most part, you know, most of the time, none of us have a clue what we're talking about. So it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. No, we like to pretend, you know, that we're professionals here, and you know, we're professional prognosticators, professional, yes, draft scouts. That's a big stretch. You know, we like to bring you guys intel, and we watch the guys to bring
it's
you guys
to
information.
About, right?
It's fun no to talk about, but about, you know? No, not even NFL teams know. If they did, they'd probably, yeah, they don't. Really, no. Nobody really knows. It's just, we could get out our D20s and roll some dice and probably do as well.
Literally,
as
everybody
teams
is guessing. So, that's all it is. Yep. And we just, it's just fun to talk about. So,
yeah,
I like talking about it, but you know, I don't get too caught up on the on who's right, who's wrong. You know, I still get people coming at me for the Travis Kelce take from a decade ago.
I wasn't going to bring it up this time. I feel like I brought it the last like two times you've been on, so I wasn't going to do it.
It's like, all right, I guess.
Yeah. We just, you know, that's just what this is about. It's really just about dunking on the people that are wrong. No one's going to remember if you were right about a player. They will definitely remember if you were wrong. That's how this works. So the best way to do it is to just never have takes. But unfortunately, you know, we can't do that. So, you know, you guys only show up for the takes. So we got to have the takes available at all times. But Aaron, appreciate you coming on, guys. He is Aaron Freeman at Locked On Falcons. He is doing a podcast 5 days, 6 days, maybe a week. Is it five or six now? It's just five, right?
You get the draft week, it'll be like every day for like 13 straight days. So,
yes, between 5 and 13 podcasts a week for Aaron Freeman. Aaron, thanks again for coming on. Anything else you want to let the people know about before we sign off?
No, just if you check out Locked On Falcons, because the Falcons aren't really doing anything. I'm just booking guests to come on the podcast. You'll probably see Kevin at some point later this month on Locked On Falcons, just to come on and share their takes about the draft. You know, got to get these takes off, as you say. And so that's what's in store. So a whole lot of people coming on, sharing their thoughts on the Falcons offseason, Falcons draft plans, players that they like. And we'll eventually get there on Thursday night and be all, you know, jacked for whoever's going to be the Falcons pick. You know, we got to come up with a pun for Dallas Turner or Latu or, you know, Jared Verse or whatever, but
turn up for Turner. I got that one already. Yeah. So the other ones I have to workshop the other ones too, but you know that I got turn up for Turner. That's as far as I got so far, but by draft night, we'll be ready. We'll have some slogans and t-shirts.
Yeah. We'll brainstorm and we'll have with focus groups. We'll do all that.
Yep.
You know?
The whole thing. We'll get the marketing execs in here and they'll definitely get us on the right track, I'm sure. But guys, thanks again to Aaron for joining us. I'm Kevin at Falcall. Kevin, please like, subscribe if y'all haven't done so already. Please leave us that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Check out the Discord server. Check out channel memberships if you're a YouTube viewer. Check out the Patreon if you're a podcast enjoyer. We'll be back with another episode on Friday, as well as stuff coming all next week too. I believe next week we'll have Will McFadden. I'm working on getting Thor Nystrom on here as well soon, and we will have as many draft guests as we can cram in the next couple weeks, as well as another live mock coming soon too. I know you guys enjoyed the first one, but until then, guys, thank you so much for watching. Thanks again to BetOnline for sponsoring tonight's episode. Until next time, guys, thank you for watching the Falcoholic Live. We'll see you soon. Have a great night, folks.